The felucca was anchored close to the muddy strip of beach below the old mosque. It was a battered, neglected craft that stank of river mud and old fish. The owner hoped to replace it with a new vessel paid for out of the exorbitant fee he had been promised for a single crossing of the river. Its amount warned him that he was at great risk, and he was edgy and fidgety as he waited. The laudanum made Penrod Ballantyne feel muzzy-headed and divorced from reality, but at least he was without pain in his limbs. He and Jakob were lying on the floorboards, where they would be concealed from casual inspection. In a whisper, Jakob was trying to tell him something that he seemed to think was of prime importance. However, Penrod's mind kept floating off on the wings of opium, and Jakob's words made no sense to him. Then, vaguely, he was aware that somebody was wading out to the vessel. He lifted himself on one elbow and looked groggily over the side. Nazira was standing on the beach, and the lithe figure of Amber Benbrook, with a large bag on her head, was moving towards the felucca. "Where is Rebecca?" he asked, and blinked to make certain he was seeing straight. Amber pulled herself aboard the felucca, then Nazira turned away from the water and ran off. "Where is Nazira going?" he wondered vaguely. Amber dropped her bag onto the deck and stooped over him. "Penrod, thank goodness! How are you feeling? Let me see your arms. I have some ointment for your bruises." "Wait until we get to the other side," he demurred. Where is Nazira going? Where's Rebecca?" Neither Amber nor Jakob answered him. Instead, Jakob gave a sharp order to the boat owner and scrambled to help him to hoist the lateen sail. It filled to the night breeze, and they bore away. The felucca sailed closer to the wind than her age would suggest, and she kicked up such a bow wave that the spray splattered over them. On the Khartoum side they went aground with such force that the rotten keel was almost torn off her. Amber and Jakob helped Penrod ashore, and Jakob propped his shoulder under his armpit to steady him as they hurried through the deserted streets of the ruined city. They met not a living soul until they reached Ryder Courtney's abandoned compound. There a Bedouin boy was waiting for them, with a string of camels. As soon as he had handed the lead reins to Jakob, he fled into the shadows. The riding camels were fully saddled and equipped. They mounted at once, but Jakob had to help Penrod into the saddle, and he was almost unseated as the animal lurched to its feet. Jakob took him on the lead and led the little caravan through the mud of almost dry canal and into the desert beyond. There he goaded the camels onwards, and they paced away, keeping the river in sight on their left-hand side. Within the first mile, Penrod lost his balance and slipped sideways out of the saddle. He hit the ground heavily and lay for a while like a dead man. They dismounted and helped him back into the saddle. "I will hold him," Amber told Jakob. She climbed up, sat behind Penrod, and placed both arms round his waist to steady him. They went on for hours, without a halt, until in the first light of dawn they picked out the shape of the lagoon ahead in the river mist. There was no sign of the steamer out on the open water. On the edge of the reed bed, Jakob reined in his camel and stood upright on his saddle. He sang out over the lagoon in a high wail that would carry for a mile. "In God's name, is there no man or jinni who hears me?" Almost immediately, from close by in the reeds, a jinni replied in a broad Scots burr. "Och aye, laddie, I hear ye." Jock McCrump had camouflaged his steamer with cut reeds so that it was almost invisible from the bank of the lagoon. As soon as they had turned the camels loose and were safely aboard, he reversed the old Ibis, now the Wisdom of the Skies, out into the open water and turned her bows eastwards for Rosiris, almost 200 miles upstream. Then he came down to the cabin where Penrod was stretched out on the bunk with Amber, anointing his blisters and bruises with the lotion that Nazira had provided.
"Och, and now you'll be expecting me to make ye a cup of tea. I hear no doot," said Jock morosely.
It was Darjeeling orange piku, with condensed milk, and Penrod had never tasted anything so heavenly. He fell asleep immediately after he'd downed a third mug, and did not wake again until they were 100 miles upriver from Khartoum, and beyond the pursuit of even the swiftest camels of Osman Atalan's Agajirs. When he opened his eyes, Amber was still sitting at the end of his bunk, but she was so engrossed in reading her father's bulky journal that for some time she did not realize he was awake. Penrod studied her countenance, as the emotions that her father's writing evoked flitted across it. He saw now that she had become far and away the beauty of the trio of Benbrook girls. Suddenly she looked at him, smiled, and closed the journal. "How are you feeling now? You've slept for 10 hours without moving."
"I am a great deal better, thanks to you and Jakob." He paused.
"Rebecca?"
Amber's smile faded, and she looked bereft.
"She will stay in Omdurman. It was her choice."
"Why?" he asked, and she told him. They were both silent for a while, and then Penrod said,
"If I had had my wits about me, I would have gone back to fetch her."
"She did the right thing," Amber said softly.
"Rebecca always does the right thing.
She made that sacrifice for love of me.
I will never forget it."
Over the rest of the river voyage, as they talked, Penrod discovered that she was no longer a child in either body or mind, but that she had become a courageous, mature young woman, her character tempered in the forge of suffering.